Hello and welcome to episode 556 of the official EstablishTheRun.com podcast. My name is Adam Levitan, as always joined by Evan Silva. And today we have a very, very special guest. This is a young man who once upon a time, long ago, had the greatest mock draft in mock draft history, an honor that he's received $0 from. Mm-hmm. Since then, he's had the dustiest of dust mock drafts, of which he's also earned $0 from. It is, of course, one of the oldest friends of the show. We knew him when he was making prospect videos from his goddamn kitchen table and filing TPS reports for Rams GM Billy Devaney. It is, of course, Josh Norris of Underdog Fantasy and Underdog's YouTube channel. Josh, how's it going today, buddy?
Things are great. I think we're at that time, and I don't know how quickly it takes you with your friends, but like we've been friends for so long. I don't know, like a decade now, it feels like, that all we do is just rip up each other, you know, just make fun of each other. Evan, I've done a bunch of, you know, interviews with like Michael A. Smith and Charles Robinson and like a bunch of national guys, right? Mm-hmm. And the story I always come back to is me sitting on the floor of the bathroom in Earth City, Missouri at the Rams draft headquarters and just texting you their entire draft board. And I realized at one point that it's just going to make me sound like the biggest rat in the world. And so maybe that's why no one's telling me anything anymore. So maybe I just need to shut up and get rid of that story from my brain and erase it.
Yeah, that day I knew that they were going to draft Robert Quinn. Yep. Great pick, by the way.
Yep.
Billy Devaney did not have a successful run as the Rams GM, but they got that one right.
After that, it was Lance Kendricks and Austin Pettis. And
Humanoanui.
Yeah, Greg Salas.
Greg Salas, that's right.
Lots of learned lessons from that one. But most importantly, if I did not do that, Evan, I would not be sitting here today talking with both of you because I would not have gotten a job with RotoWorld.
It's great to have you. Josh, by the way, is getting married very, very soon. In all seriousness, big congrats to Josh. Congrats on the sex, et cetera, et cetera. On today's show, we are going to talk about landing spots for the rookies, specifically quarterbacks and running backs. On the next episode, we'll talk about landing spots for wide receivers and tight ends. Obviously, all the prospects that we talked about on the draft preview shows now have a home. The questions that remain are, how does this player fit with his new scheme? How does he fit with his new teammates? What kind of path does he have to putting up statistics in the near and short term, et cetera? Before we get into it, most of you listen to this on our podcast feed. I know that. I want to let you know, though, that you're going to be missing a lot of content that we make specifically for the YouTube bros. For example, we do quick videos on undervalued players, live streams where we analyze drafts, funny stuff, lots more. Those videos will not hit this podcast feed, so go to YouTube, search Establish the Run, subscribe to the channel. Hitting that subscribe button really helps us out. We'll make sure you know when we're posting new stuff. That's youtube.com/establishtherun and click subscribe. Josh's YouTube channel is also blowing up as well. They are doing great stuff over on the Underdog YouTube channel. Be sure you check that out. Let's start here with Bryce Young because Josh from Carolina, longtime Panthers, I don't know, fan. I mean, it's embarrassing.
They pulled me back in.
I mean, God, imagine being a fan of a team. But anyways, Josh is a Panthers fan. They make the move to take Bryce Young. They really have a whole new team. Bryce Young, Miles Sanders, DJ Chark, Adam Thielen. They take Jonathan Mingo, who we can talk about next episode, Hayden Hurst. The problem with Bryce Young for me in fantasy is we don't have him projected for a very big rush role. Now, if you think he's going to come to the NFL and all of a sudden be some really good rusher, maybe our projection is wrong. I feel pretty good right now, though, where we have him around quarterback 23. Josh, what do you think about Bryce Young's fit with this Panthers team?
I would say his athleticism, his creativity is showcased more as a passer than it is as a runner. I really love Bryce Young's fit. Now, what Carolina has done the last few years is in terms of building up the defense, in terms of building up the offensive line. They finally have some competent coaches in there with not just Frank Reich, but also Thomas Brown and, you know, my buddy Josh McCown. And you surround him in like a situation where actually this past season at Alabama, I'm sure you guys, when you watched Bryce Young, that is not your typical top five, top 10 offensive line that he was behind this past season, right? He faced a ton of pressure. He was able to make the first man miss, create some space, and then keep his eyes open and attack all levels of the field. And I would even say like his pre-snap processing is a bit overlooked because of just how much of a playmaker he is. I love the fit. Now, in year one, like you're saying, in a team that may or may not be leaders in the clubhouse for the NFC South, Is his ceiling as high as some other guys we're about to talk about? Probably not. But in terms of helping this team be as stable at the quarterback position as they have been since, you know, Cam Newton's MVP season, I wager that that's exactly what we're going to get during Bryce Young's rookie season.
Yeah, Evan, I know you're working on your top 150 right now. Mm-hmm. I don't think I would have Bryce Young in my top 150 mm-hmm. at all. Like, I would have him in the same range as maybe like Jordan Love, Stafford, yeah. Garoppolo, guys like that. Evan, any thoughts on Bryce Young as a Panther?
I think it's going to be a little tough for him out of the gate. But I like how they've built up their offensive line. I mean, they've poured a lot of resources into their line. Obviously, they used that really high pick on Ike Ekwonu last year. He kind of started his rookie year off slowly, but I think he finished strong. They paid Bradley Bozeman. They paid Austin Corbett. They paid Taylor Moton a few years ago, and he might be their best offensive lineman right now. Brady Christensen, they kind of stole him in, what, the third round a couple years ago. So I think Bryce Young has a chance. It's going to be tough for him in fantasy. I wanted to ask this to Josh, though.
Yeah.
So the predominant comparison that people make between Bryce Young and another NFL player is Drew Brees. It's really hard to be Drew Brees. I mean, yeah. Drew Brees is perfect. Like, he was perfect. I mean, he didn't have a super strong arm. He's a good athlete, but he's just a good athlete. He's not like a scrambler or anything like that. He's small. It's really hard to be Drew Brees. You have to be like perfect fundamentally in every single aspect. But do you think Bryce Young can do that?
It's a great question, and so much is made about Bryce's height, and I think that that's part of the comparison, obviously, with Drew, right? Whenever Drew was better than a bunch of these other shorter quarterbacks like we've seen with Kyler Murray and we've seen with Russell Wilson, is that he actually attacked the middle of the field. You know, it wasn't like just this void there, and then we have to attack outside the numbers. Bryce showcased that same exact thing at Alabama. And look, all we can do is kind of like read between the lines and like try to peek through keyholes here, but just the constant churn of information of how smart Bryce Young is, in that he understands based on coverages where to look and where to go with the football. And then on top of that, where he's probably different than Drew is, again, that comfort in the chaos, that poise in the noise that he like brings to the table. Again, that's not going to equal huge 60-yard rushing gains like a quarterback we're about to talk about. But again, the little twitch that he has, the torque that he has to throw with the football too, to me, allows him to break the mold of a position that so long was drafted and scouted for a certain mold. And if that hits, that's kind of what I love most about the NFL, is when a player, you know, just breaks the parameters of a position.
Sure. Okay. A guy went second who... actually, and you know, I know we're poo-pooing Bryce Young in fantasy here. We have him QB 23. We have CJ Stroud, even worse, borderline undraftable in one QB league. CJ Stroud, like, the situation just is not great. He is a pocket passer with worse weapons, I think, than Bryce Young. We're talking about Nico Collins, Robert Woods, Dalton Schultz. I mean, this is really ugly. I don't think we have to spend a lot of time here, as I want to kind of keep this to fantasy as much as possible. I don't think CJ Stroud, Evan, is going to be on the radar very often for fantasy this year. Any disagreement there?
No, I do not disagree with that. He's not going to be in the initial top 150. We had Mike Renner on, and he kind of gave us a synopsis of why Bryce Young is so superior to CJ Stroud. But I want to hear Josh's take on that. What separates the two at the top?
Well, I'm about to give you a boring answer where I think there's a case that all three of the top quarterbacks to be the first overall pick in any draft. You know, I could easily see CJ Stroud being the number one pick back in 2022, right? And just his placement and his accuracy at all three levels of the field, and then all quarters of the field from left to right, is staggering. Like, he'll put it on your face mask. He'll put it between the numbers. He'll put it on the upfield shoulder. Now, on top of that, where we talked about Bryce Young's creativity, CJ Stroud only showed that in like a game and a half, right? It's his final college game against Georgia. The second half of that Northwestern game, I think a lot of people believe now that he has that athleticism to buy himself some time and to create because of those two contests. And Evan, you know this, it's basically a prerequisite to play quarterback now to do that, right? Or at least to be elite at the position. But CJ, back at Ohio State, just had a slew of incredible wide receivers, right? Yeah. You go from... Garrett Wilson to Chris Olave to JSN to Marvin Harrison Jr. And you go from that with really good pockets to now the Houston Texans, where it's like Nico Collins and John Metchie and company. Mm-hmm. But at the very least, like Bobby Slowick coming from this 49ers coaching tree and working all levels of the field and especially the middle of the field, hopefully that elevates CJ just a little bit. And I'm not here to say like he is reliant on his skill position players to succeed, but it's just in a different way than these other two quarterbacks that were also drafted in the top four overall.
Come on, guys. We're being ridiculous here. We're picking on it. He's not going to put up big numbers with this offensive line in this scheme with these weapons, period. You know, we can talk about the hip swivel all we want. Let's be honest here. Okay.
But I think it is relevant though, because he is being drafted as what, the quarterback 26. And so on underdog, like he is going to be one of the top three quarterbacks on your team. And he is going ahead of like guys that are locked in starters, you know, in Jimmy G, in Desmond Ridder. I'm not sure what that says about them, but what we talked about with Bryce Young and the offensive line, I mean, the Texans are kind of the same exact thing, right? Arguably the best left tackle in the league in Laremy Tunsil, Titus Howard at right tackle, when they spent a first round pick in Kenyon Green last year. So
they brought in Shaq Mason.
So at least it's not like the worst case scenario for a rookie quarterback to step into, like we have seen in the past with some of these top guys.
Okay, let's talk about someone that actually matters enough already. Anthony Richardson goes number four to Indy. Everyone says that the narrative, and this is going to gain a ton of steam in the summer when we get more casuals in, oh, Shane Steichen did this for Jalen Hurts. Shane Steichen is going to do this for Anthony Richardson. That is a big leap to me. However, one that obviously excites me. The hardcore people have an absolute full 3.9 inches for Anthony Richardson in fantasy right now. I saw he's going as QB 11 right now. We have him slightly below that, I believe. I'll double check that. But yeah, Evan, what do you think about Anthony Richardson's specific landing spot in Indy and how he'll fare in fantasy?
I think that it's just like Shane Steichen knows how to run an offense and build an offense around a quarterback that may have some deficiencies as a passer. And I mean, they're just going to run the crap out of the ball. They got Jonathan Taylor back there. They have Anthony Richardson, and they're going to be extreme run heavy. And I think that that's okay. And Anthony Richardson's going to run the ball a ton too. Right. So it's just Shane Steichen knows how to build an offense around a player like this. And I love the fact, and I'm going to keep harping on this, that Shane Steichen came out right after the draft and said, we're not going to sit him. Right. Like the way that you develop a player is to let him play. You know, he doesn't need to be sitting on the bench watching other guys do it. He needs to go out there, take his lumps, learn on the job, and that's what he's going to do. And I think he's going to play within the first month of the season, if not start week one.
So we have Anthony Richardson's QB 13 right now, very close to Kirk Cousins, Dak Prescott, Tua Tagovailoa. I think that's the right range for him, but I can make a case, Josh, that he should be going even higher. You start to get pictures of Jalen Hurts and Justin Fields running all over the place. And I actually kind of like the weapons that Indy has. This is not like Houston. I mean, man, they have some players. I mean, I thought Alec Pierce was quietly showed flashes last year. Michael Pittman. I still like Jelani Woods and Mo Alley. So yeah, I don't know. Where do you come down on all this Anthony Richardson in fantasy talk?
Well, even in the last 48 hours, he's jumped up even higher than that, Adam. He's now quarterback 10 on underdog, 85th overall. So you know, there is no discount anymore like there was in that first weekend for.
That's a pass for me at that number, by the way. But yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, that's ahead of Dak Prescott at the moment and Tua. Yeah. So the big part of Richardson was that he was termed a project. And as what Evan said, he's just going to be able to learn the field. And that is beautiful. As he said, you take your lumps and roll with it. The other part of this, though, is so often athleticism and arm is equated to upside and ceiling, whereas someone like Shane Steichen can see it as a floor for a player. You know, like getting all of that rushing experience and expertise out of him to maximize then the processing, the accuracy, and that's what's unlocked the ceiling is, to me, beautiful. Now, what we saw last year with the Eagles that I'm sure a lot of people are expecting them to replicate is both Miles Sanders and Jalen Hurts both had 26 carries inside the 10-yard line. For Jalen Hurts, that equaled 11 touchdowns. For Miles Sanders, that equaled 8. Those are two numbers that were tied for the third most carries inside the 10 across the NFL. That's just not going to happen with the Colts. They are not the Eagles, right? But could we see a 50-50 split or a 40-60 split between Anthony Richardson and Jonathan Taylor in those high-value touch or those goal-scoring opportunities? Yeah. For sure. And as we know, like, 6 points for rushing score is so valuable when it comes to this position. So I'm totally with it. Either I love to double tap where he's going now as quarterback 10, 11, 12 with someone like Deshaun Watson in that area or Dak Prescott in that area, or just bank like I'm proven and going to be right with Anthony Richardson as like a top end player at the position.
Right.
And then just go with a much later option like, I don't know, Jimmy Garoppolo later on.
Yeah. And I think your point on the offense is well taken. I don't think people understand how soft the Eagles' schedule was last year. They played absolutely no one, no quarterbacks. They were running up the score. They're running the ball 25, 30 times a game. It's easier to do that when you face that soft of a schedule. Colts' schedule will not be tough this year. We know their opponents. We don't know the exact order of them, but it certainly won't be as easy, I think, as what the Eagles saw. So yeah, you know, Anthony Richardson hype, I think among hardcore people will be far higher than it will be among casuals. We'll see where his ADP settles come the summer. Bijan Robinson, 8 to the Falcons. I don't want to debate the merit of the pick or whatever. I just want to talk about how Bijan specifically fits with the Falcons. This was already one of the NFL's best rushing teams, 3rd in raw rush yards last year, 4th in yards per attempt, 4th in rushing EPA. Tyler Allgeier was PFF's number 6 running back out of 60 qualifying running backs. All this is just to say that they already had an awesome run game. Now you add Bijan Robinson. We're clearly not sneaking this one past anyone, Josh. His ADP is somewhere around the 8 or 9 range from what I've seen in drafts I've done so far. Josh, how do you think Bijan fits specifically with the scheme and talent Atlanta has?
Well, outstanding. You know, it's a team that brought back Chris Lindstrom, right? Caleb McGarry. Like, this is where they're at their best in terms of running the ball. And what, we're entering year 3 of Arthur Smith, and I have no freaking clue of what an Arthur Smith offense is, right? Like, first year is Matt Ryan, then you go to Marcus Mariota, then you flip over to Desmond Ridder, and every single one of those is slightly different. He did come out in his post-draft press conferences and say we want to be more balanced in terms of passing and throwing the ball. Like last year, they were leading the NFL in carries per game, and I think about 32 or 33. About league average is what, 26 or 27? So that's a drop in 6. However, we might see, you know, Marcus Mariota's 6 carries per game now go to the running back position. So I wouldn't expect like the touches or opportunities to really change at all for these guys. And so like, if you're not going to change the quarterback, at least now you have pillar players in Drake London, Kyle Pitts, and Bijan. So running back overall 7th overall pick is extremely rich. But I do understand it for a player that we are so certain of what the opportunity and volume are going to be and the success they already have it with a much lesser talent last season.
Totally agree. And like, I'd be willing to take in regular half PPR formats, I'd be willing to take Bijan as high as 6th. I don't know if I'd actually pull the trigger there. That's like where I'd at least start to consider him. Evan, any thoughts on Bijan in Atlanta?
No, I just echo the comments that you guys had. They also traded up for Matthew Bergeron, who Lance Zierlein pointed out, he was one of his favorite run blocking prospects on tape before the draft. They're going to run the crap out of the ball. We don't even need to talk about Bijan Robinson. We need to figure out where we're going to rank like Kyle Pitts and Drake London. That's the real quandary from a fantasy standpoint in Atlanta. Like, they're going to just keep running the crap out of the ball. I mean, Arthur Smith like thinks he's like throwback Joe Gibbs.
quick note, Adam. I think there is a conversation though. Like, we know what we're getting from Austin Eckler. Now we just talked about how great rushing the ball probably the Colts are going to be. Like, are we just that confident in Bijan Robinson being the running back 2 overall and like the first running back after those top end wide receivers? You know, that's a conversation that's going to last all summer long.
I think the role is different, right? Bijan's going to have a much more workhorse type role than Eckler will, who we know comes off the field a bunch. Jonathan Taylor, I think, came off the field a bunch. Or it projects to come off the field a reasonable amount, and Anthony Richardson push play stuff. So yeah, I feel good about Bijan over Eckler and JT. Not to say anything bad about those guys, but I just feel better about the role for Bijan. Let's go to Jahmyr Gibbs. Jahmyr Gibbs goes 12th overall to the Lions. We've talked about this a lot already. I just think it's an awesome fit. Jared Goff is going to have a low ADOT. Jahmyr Gibbs on turf, I think, is probably better for him. And honestly, like, relatively little target competition behind Amon-Ra St. Brown in terms of guys who actually earn a lot of targets. So I think that the hype on Jahmyr Gibbs is pretty warranted. Evan, what do you think about the landing spot specifically for Gibbs in fantasy?
The question is just, can he be a workhorse at 199 pounds? I mean, that's it. I mean, I think he's going to be the lead back in Detroit, but can he be a workhorse?
Yeah. Well, I think they're going to play David Montgomery in the Jamal Williams role from last year.
And that's a problem.
And it's certainly a problem. We have Gibbs around 39th overall in half PPR right now, RB15. Norris, any thoughts on Jahmyr Gibbs' landing spot for fantasy?
Yeah, lots of them. Brad Holmes, the general manager, went out after the draft. And I mean, they had a chance to draft Bijan Robinson if they wanted to,
right?
You know, and instead traded out. And it's because he said that Bijan was more of the bell cow back and they prefer Gibbs' style in terms of explosiveness. So like, it's clear that they don't want him to be a feature back or a foundation back. Now, I don't think we can carbon copy what happened in last year's backfield with Jamal Williams and DeAndre Swift, especially Jamal Williams, because like, talk about running hot. 28 carries inside of the 5-yard line. The next closest with Jalen Hurts at 20 and 14 touchdowns in that area. That's simply not going to happen again, right? But same thing with Jahmyr Gibbs at Alabama, where I think he only had like 6 or 7 carries in goal to go situations. It certainly nukes, I think, the high end ceiling of what I viewed for David Montgomery this year. But if we're talking about goal scoring opportunities, unless mindsets drastically change, I would still expect Dave Montgomery to hold on to those. We just get a better version, I believe, despite what fantasy Twitter believes, of Jahmyr Gibbs and a trust level that they have in him over DeAndre Swift.
Yeah. Oh, there's absolutely no doubt that this staff clearly wants Jahmyr Gibbs to play the role they thought they wanted Swift to have, but did not like him in that role. We've seen players like this, I mean, share carries and put up huge fantasy numbers. Alvin Kamara, Mark Ingram comes to mind. Austin Eckler was a part-time player. I mean, this stuff happens all the time where fantasy, you can get big fantasy numbers from guys who are satellite-ish or 10 to 14 touchbacks.
Quick question, Adam, because now the gap between these two Lions runners is massive. I mean, it's somewhat similar to what Swift and Jamal Williams were heading into last season. I mean, Dave Montgomery is being drafted as the running back 27 now on Underdog, and Jahmyr Gibbs is at running back 13. We just talked about the value of touchdowns, you know?
The people on Underdog, and all credit to people, I think there's a lot of sharp people drafting on Underdog. It has gone way too far, in my opinion, with the wide receiver thirst. And before, it wasn't enough. People were taking running backs too much. It jumped the shark. Now people are taking wide receivers so much. There's so many running backs. This format on Underdog, where it's half PPR, for the specific scoring system, you don't get yardage bonuses. Half PPR, it's so touchdown reliant. It's touchdowns. That's it. You know. So, yeah, I don't know, man. I think that Dave Montgomery getting nuked this bad down on the Jahmyr Gibbs pick is too far. Okay. I don't want to spend a lot of time here because we're not sure exactly what Will Levis's role is going to be. My thought on the Will Levis stuff is just, they're going to give Ryan Tannehill, Derrick Henry one more chance. And, you know, one more chance to do something. If it doesn't work out, then you blow it up. And you move forward with Will Levis and whoever else you think can have a modern offense, not this prehistoric stuff they're running now. My concern, and I assume that it's going to blow up in their face, my concern is that Mike Vrabel always seems to get the most out of his teams one way or another. And I'm always underestimating the Titans. Norris, do you think Will Levis gets into the starting role this year? Should fantasy players be taking him?
Well, I don't see how it's that much different than like a Desmond Ridder situation last year. You know, I know Tannehill's better than Marcus Mariota and has been starting the league for a longer period of time, but it was pretty clear reading between the lines that they were kind of done with Ryan Tannehill this year if like a better option came available, especially when they were trying to trade up to the number 3 overall selection and draft CJ Stroud. So maybe we see him for 2 or 3 or 4 games towards the end of the year, but I'm kind of with you where I wouldn't expect anything from a fantasy conversation of Will Levis this season.
Yeah, agreed. All right, Evan, let's move on to Zach Charbonnet, 52 overall to the Seattle Seahawks. A surprising pick because on paper, at least, or at least to the eye test, Kenneth Walker was awesome last year. Now, if you dig in a little bit more, his success rate was not great. In other words, he was a big-time boomer bust runner, kind of similar to Saquon Barkley maybe. And also, Kenneth Walker was not a good pass catcher in college, was not a great pass catcher as a rookie in the NFL. Zach Charbonnet, on the other hand, is a grinder, a better pass catcher. So you can see the complementary role here, Evan. I am concerned for both these guys. I don't know exactly how it's going to go. I talked about it a bunch on Market Monday. If you guys are interested in more in my take, you can go there. But Evan, I'm curious on your take for Zach Charbonnet in Seattle.
Well, I'll say this. You know, last year when Rashad Penny was healthy, he was the clear number one back. And they, you know, kind of eased Kenneth Walker in. Then Rashad Penny went down, and Kenneth Walker was the clear number one back. So, you know, at least based on, you know, recency bias, that, you know, their recent history, like they seem to prefer a clear lead back. And I think that Kenneth Walker is just better than Zach Charbonnet. I like Zach Charbonnet. He wound up, I think, in Daniel Jeremiah's top 50 prospects. We had Thor on, and he was a big fan, compared Zach Charbonnet to Todd Gurley. You know, Zach Charbonnet, like, checks all the boxes to be, like, a quality back in the NFL, I think. But the recent history suggests that, and I think Kenneth Walker's better. I want to hear Josh talk about this, though.
I mean, I love Kenneth Walker. Loved him prior to last year's draft. Loved him after the draft. Home run hitter, like you said. And to me, it's okay that, like, hey, if his efficiency on all these runs isn't ideal, because he can have one single run that changes the outcome of a game, you know?
I agree with you, but I don't think Pete Carroll agrees with you. But go ahead.
But I also think that, like, John Schneider and Pete Carroll are, hey, this guy's at the top of the board. We love guys like this, and we're just going to add talent to whatever position, regardless of the value to it. And I kind of think that's what happened here. I also love Zach Charbonnet's game. When you turn on his games, the number one thing that stands out is, like, the fluidity and versatility at his size. And he is comfortable as a pass catcher much more than Kenneth Walker is. So the answer to this is I'm just sad that they both get nuked, because Kenneth Walker is going to be drafted as a top 8 running back this year. And now they're, like, both of these middling guys. And well, and if both stay healthy, you're probably going to, like, bounce back and forth.
Where's Kenneth Walker's ADP right now?
Yeah, he's there going, like, in the 40s now. I mean, he's been getting just dumped down. I saw him, I was in a draft today. He went, like, 44th or something.
Yeah,
like
I still want him.
Running back 15, 45th.
I'm going to end up ahead of ADP on him for sure.
Yeah, I mean, there's a big, big, big gap right now. And Walker is in the 40s, but there's still a big gap down to Charbonnet. And, you know, we'll see what the market thinks in that when more people start drafting. But, yeah, I mean, God. It would not shock me, like, at all. And I love Kenneth Walker too. It would not shock me at all if, like, at some point this season, Zach Charbonnet starts out touching Kenneth Walker. Like, that's not
real
crazy.
Quick. Pete Carroll did call Kenneth Walker after this selection and just, like, talk through how they envisioned the running back room. So I don't think that this is not a Jahmyr Gibbs overtaking DeAndre Swift and we're done with you scenario. Right.
Oh, definitely not. Definitely not. Yeah. And at 44 overall, I agree with you. I like Kenneth Walker there still. We'll see where the Charbonnet ADP settles. Let's go to Kendre Miller. So this is one, man. I actually sent a tweet, and I never send tweets about my stupid long shot bets, but I did because I thought this one was interesting. I took 100-1 on Kendre Miller to be the offensive rookie of the year. He goes 71st overall in round 3 to the Saints. My take is just Jamal Williams is just a guy, and Norris just highlighted how so much of his production last year was on 1-yard touchdowns and 2-yard touchdowns. Alvin Kamara has suspension looming, and Alvin Kamara's usage was really weird down the stretch last year. Also, I don't know if I agree with this, but the market thinks that the Saints are the best team in the NFC South. They're a pretty big favorite to win the NFC South. So you have a team that people think are going to be good with questions at the running back position. And I know a lot of my tape bros out there, Norris, love Kendre Miller. I mean, I see people hyping up Kendre Miller all the time. All the tape bros seem to be in on this guy. Strikes me as a really sneaky, good fit for Kendre Miller. What do you think about him?
So the Saints kind of describe running backs in two ways, either, you know, your three down backs or your joker types. And the jokers are like the Jahmyr Gibbs, the Devon Achane's, and they didn't put Kendre Miller in that regard. They view him as like an every down player with speed to be a home run hitter too, gets north and south and all that stuff. So, like, who knows what the season is going to entail for Alvin Kamara. I am with you on the awesome role player that Jamal Williams is, but, like, let's say either Kamara gets hurt, this is to take workload off of him. Kendre Miller to me is the one that steps in potentially as, like, the lead runner on that team. And it's not too different than the situation that Alvin Kamara stepped into during his rookie year. Remember, that was with Mark Ingram and that was with Adrian Peterson. You earn more opportunities, albeit very different players. And yeah, Kendre Miller being drafted as a top 5 player at his position, I thought spoke volumes for how much the league liked him, maybe more than the draft community did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, strikes me as a really good fit. Evan, any thoughts on Kendre Miller in New Orleans?
Well, I had not watched him play before the draft. And then as I was doing my draft grades, I turned him on. And, man, he is a fun dude to watch. I mean, he's going to be fun in the preseason. And if he can get that opportunity based on, you know, an incoming suspension for Alvin Kamara, he's going to blow some people away because he is a really, really – how would you break him down like a scouting report, Josh?
He has these like little jump cuts right before contact that makes like defenders almost grab at air. And so that like he certainly is not going to be as electric as, again, the Gibbs and the Bijan types. But to me, he can also pick out the tough yards that a lot of the other backs in this class, a class that was lacking in size in general.
Yeah. And he's 215 pounds.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And so that really stands out, I'm sure, when watching a bunch of these. And like the Saints really just believe in mid-round running backs. You know, it's proved them really well in the past. And adding one here, despite already adding one in the summer, probably speaks to how high of a grade. I wouldn't be surprised if it was a second-round grade on Kendre Miller they had on him.
Just wanted to get a quick dynasty take on Tajay Spears. I don't think he's really too viable in redraft this year, given Derrick Henry is still there. But Tajay Spears, there was a bunch of notes on his knee, I believe, that
right.
that came out. Not great for Dynasty to be taking a running back who's effectively redshirted in year one and also has knee issues. But Josh, any long-term thoughts on Tajay Spears quickly?
I think the Titans were aware of that discourse.
Of course.
All Mike Vrabel talked about was like, oh, he was a full participant through the week at the Senior Bowl. He didn't miss much time at all during his time at Tulane. We're both comfortable with where we're at medically with Tajay Spears, blah, blah, blah. I was a little surprised that kind of undersold just how electric he is as a player. Like, you turn on his stuff, and for someone who has crazy jump cuts to make people miss, he has very few negative carries. Cause so often we see that of guys like making all these crazy moves and then they get tackled for 3 or 4 yard losses. Hey, Kenneth Walker's who we just mentioned, right? Mm-hmm. But Tajay is like very efficient with his movements. So I truly hope that he does have ACLs and that does work out for him, because if so, after this year, when Derrick Henry isn't on the team, then he could be a lot of fun in that offense.
Yes, and that's the play for Dynasty. Obviously, we're expecting Derrick Henry to not be a Titan after this year. Evan, we put out the video of you with the full 3.9 inches for Devon Achane. He goes at 84 to the Dolphins. This team just continues to emphasize speed, speed, speed. We've covered this pretty well mm-hmm. already. Hype is starting to build on Devon Achane, though. If you made like a list of guys who are definitely going to go higher than they're going now, like Devon Achane would be for sure on that list. Any further thoughts here, Evan?
We've covered him pretty in depth. I want to hear Josh talk about him. I mean, yeah. I've just kind of made a commitment to myself that I'm going to be ahead of ADP on Devon Achane, because the fit in the offense is just spectacular.
Yeah. My only comment is a slight concern that they make a move for someone like Dalvin Cook, and then that kind of nukes whatever true upside.
That has been a rumor, I think.
That's correct. Been rumored. Yeah. I don't know if that's going to go down after they took Achane, but yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I could see it. Mike McDaniel loved the guy though. And like that speaks volumes, and they just love the thing with Achane is, despite him being 188 pounds, a lot of that was because of, you know, his track background. And coming out of Texas A&M with Jimbo Fisher, like they do run some pro style stuff. And so despite that size, he probably has, and we'll talk about another guy later, maybe in Izzy Abanaconda. To me, he's better on contact despite being like 30 pounds lighter, you know? And I think that does, whenever we talk about weight with running backs, it's because they get pigeonholed so often. But if you can prove a la Alvin Kamara, who's heavier than that, but that you can hold up to a workload, I think Achane can do that because of how successful he's kind of been on contact before for someone typically of his size.
Yeah. There was some 40-1 on Achane to be offensive rookie of the year. I'm not sure if that's still out there. Jaguars at 88 take Tank Bigsby, which I thought was an interesting pick because so much of Travis Etienne's role or value last year was an outrageous role. Like Travis Etienne was handling like 90%+ of the Jaguars running back touches. I am not sure they want to do that going forward. So I am not surprised that they took a running back here in round three. Josh, does Tank Bigsby have the ability to play right away and take away from Achane? And do you think Bigsby can carve out any standalone value?
Yeah, I mean, just nuts stuff from ATN as soon as James Robinson got traded, like 24 carries, 28 carries, then 17, 19, and 22 later on in the year. I mean, Doug Peterson's talked since the combine that they were going to add a backfield or I should say a running back room of about four guys. I think last year they're kind of forced on them just because of getting a draft pick for a guy who was withering away in James Robinson and not trusting Snoop Connor. Mm-hmm. So yeah, funny, interesting part of this is Trent Baalke, every year he's been a general manager, he's drafted a running back. So I don't think this is anything new for him.
Yeah.
And I just think it kind of rounds out. And Bigsby does offer a slightly different skill set to Etienne in terms of short yardage situations.
This team also has Dearness Johnson, Evan, who I actually think Dearness Johnson can play. Maybe that's my minor league football bias seeping in. But yeah, this all of a sudden, this running back room actually has a bunch of guys. And that's, you know, a concern for Etienne a little bit. Evan, any thoughts on Tank Bigsby to Jacksonville?
I kind of was holding out hope that Dearness Johnson would get that opportunity to be the clear number two back in Jacksonville, but obviously he's not going to get that. And Snoop Connor's now on the roster bubble. Yeah. Because Tank Bigsby as a third round pick is going to be on the team, and he's probably the heavy favorite to be the number two RB at this point.
Agreed. Roschon Johnson, the Bears at 115th overall. All of a sudden they have Deonte Foreman, Khalil Herbert, Roschon Johnson. I mean, they have a lot of backs. Plus Justin Fields is going to be stealing a bunch of carries as well. We don't really have any of the Bears running backs ranked very highly because it's on a team that we don't project to score a lot of touchdowns, and Justin Fields takes a lot of the rushing ones. It's hard, right? So I know there are, Roschon has serious fans out there, though. A lot of fans for a guy who went in the fourth round, Josh. But anyways, what do you think about Roschon to the Bears?
I'm probably forgetting a team, but is this the most ambiguous backfield in the league right now? Yeah. And I love
it's up there. It's up there for sure.
I love Khalil Herbert for like what he did in spot duty last year, and even when he was a starter at times. But we have to remember that the same coaching staff, when David Montgomery was healthy, they were giving him two series for every one series for Khalil Herbert. You know, Roschon is one of these players who offers special teams work. He is almost like a one cut runner in the style of, I think, Wayne Gallman. So I might not be one of those top end huge fans like you're talking about and referring to, Adam.
NFL was not too high on Roschon either, as we saw in the draft. Now, I want to bring up Chase Brown here, Evan, just because the Bengals situation is messy. And like Chase Brown maybe has a path to an actual role. Joe Mixon has his contract and off-field issues. Samaje Perine is gone. They have not trusted Chris Evans and Travion Williams before. Now, I know Josh tweeted today, there has been a lot of rhetoric about Travion Williams coming out of Cincinnati. They are, for what it's worth, and we hear this all the time about young backups, but this has been a steady drumbeat of Bengals front office coaches talking up Travion Williams. Still, they used a fifth round pick on Chase Brown. There's a lot going on here because Joe Mixon was not great for a lot of last year. I already mentioned contract and off-field issues. Evan, any thoughts on Chase Brown as a Bengal?
Well, Chase Brown had like a great career at Illinois. The knock on him was that he was maybe not that athletic. And then he goes to the combine and runs 4.41. I thought it was a really interesting pick that the Bengals made because of the situation that you talk about. Travion Williams has been there for years, and they don't give him the ball. So I don't really trust that rhetoric because there's just really no evidence to back it, because we've seen, like, they could have given him the ball, but they didn't give him the ball. So
slight pushback. Okay. I just want to open this up because right now on Underdog, people go crazy for rookies, right? Chase Brown is being drafted as the running back 52, then Chris Evans as the running back 86, and then Travion Williams as the running back 102. So like that gap to me is a bit drastic when we're looking at like 18th round dart throws. Mm-hmm. Someone like Travion Williams, who did end his rookie contract this past offseason, they gave him like a $1 million one-year deal that has no guarantees, granted. But what they've been saying, their dialogue has been, whenever we have given him opportunities in the past, he has showcased something good. And so I guess where I have deficiencies as an analyst is thinking to December, when rookies typically do just thrive, right? And instead focusing a bit too much on like, hey, week one, who's going to be in this role? Because I think that like that's kind of what I can
predict. That's a really good point. And I think we all kind of struggle with that.
Right. Yeah. And Travion, to me, is going to be that first opportunity. He's going to get that first opportunity to step in for Samaje Perine and probably get that passing down work. And it's up to the other guys to prove that they should have those opportunities over him, or for Travion to lose them. I guess that was my main point in that whole tweet exchange.
Yeah, no, I think that's totally fair. Projectable volume in week one, I think, is a hole that a lot of people fall into. Obviously, we want our team to be peaking later in the season. Wanted to open up here if you guys have anyone we haven't mentioned whose landing spot stuck out to you. I wanted to just bring up Evan Hull. I was excited that he landed with the Colts, which I thought was a good spot, but the quarterback that he landed with is not great for his skill set. I don't expect Anthony Richardson to have a very high RB target rate. And I think that's what Evan Hull does well. So not the best quarterback fit, I think, with Evan Hull. But Josh or Evan, any guys we didn't mention here whose landing spot stuck out to you at the running back or quarterback position?
I would just say with Evan Hull, like the depth chart behind Jonathan Taylor, it's going to be easy to climb. I mean, we've seen Zach Moss before. Mm-hmm. Deion Jackson, you know, no one's ever going to, you know, make a commitment to Deion Jackson because no one's ever invested in him. Jake Funk is like a special teams player. So I think that Evan Hull has a pretty clear path to being the Colts number two back.
Yeah. And I think with Evan Hull, it went along with Chris Ballard's tendency to only draft athletes. And Evan Hull was a freak of an athlete coming out of Northwestern. I quickly want to talk about Izzy Abanaconda because he's the apple of so many people's eyes on the dynasty community. And I understand he's 5'10", 216, and he just has ludicrous straight line speed. If he sees an alley, he's like off to the races. I will push back on him playing at 216 pounds. And maybe this is just, you know, me and being a tape bro, Adam, but the guy is 20 years old, but he is so bad on contact. It's kind of shocking. He can always improve in that area, but he was 133rd in yards after contact this past season. 782 of his yards were before contact. That's the second most in the top five conferences. He was 64th in forced missed tackle rate in college football last year. So I think a lot of people are saying, okay, it's Breece Hall, and they're just going to like get rid of Michael Carter. And maybe they do, but I kind of think Izzy is more in the vein of why they drafted Breece Hall of, hey, we're sick of having 11, 12, 13 play drives, and we want as many guys that can, you know, have a 60, 50, 40 yard touchdown, which is extremely valuable. And Izzy, if you give him that clear lane, his straight line burst is just insane. So I just want to push back on like him being termed this power back or complete back because of his size.
Come on. He went 143rd overall in the fifth round. And I get that.
I'm just saying.
Right. So, but I'm saying that the dynasty bros get all excited about these guys who they love. They love their hip swivel and their burst through the line. The NFL told you what they think of this kid. He went 143rd, and yeah, there's gonna be outliers. Isaiah Pacheco was obviously a great pick, you know, a great late round pick. There's been plenty of running backs, I get it, who have gone this late and come out to be something. But yeah, you know, I don't think they're going to cut. Well, actually, I have to look into it. I shouldn't say that because I haven't looked into this enough, but it would surprise me if they dump Michael Carter for Izzy. Yeah. Okay. That's going to do it for rookie landing spots, running back and quarterback. Josh, tell the people where they can find you wherever you want to be found, if you want to be found.
I do. Underdog Fantasy Football Channel. Go and subscribe. It's me and this guy named Hayne Winks. Pretty good. Does the nerds and spreadsheet stuff. And
Josh also does commercial voiceovers.
Not just voiceovers.
That's a great way to live, by the way.
Yep.
Would you rather do voiceovers on commercials or be like a backup quarterback for your entire career?
I'm sure backup quarterback is more lucrative. Not only does Josh do commercials, I think I actually said this on Twitter, but I was in Vegas not that long ago, a couple months. I'm walking through Aria Casino. They have like hundreds of TVs everywhere. Josh's face is on every one of the TVs. Shilling Underdog. Unbelievable. What a sim. The sim is so broken. Someone to unplug it and plug it back in. What a world. Okay. That is going to do it for this episode. Appreciate y'all being here. Be sure you're following me and Evan on Twitter as well, at Adam Levitan, at Evan Silva, all one word. For Josh, for Evan, for producer Luke, I'm Adam. Good luck, everybody.